listening to the Brave Parent Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Susan Maples. I'm here for all parents who deeply love their children and want their health span to equal their lifespan. In other words, to be healthy their entire lives. If that's you, tune in. In every episode, we're grappling with contemporary issues that affect every child every day in areas that your doctors either don't know or don't have time to tell you. It's your time to be brave. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Brave Parent Podcast, Season 2. I have a very special guest, a very longtime friend on today, who I'm thrilled to be able to bring to you. He's an internationally acclaimed speaker, makes big bucks for speaking, and today he's doing it as a gift to us and to you. And he is the founder of On Target Living and has written 7 books and has a brand new one out, which we'll talk a little bit about in a while. But Chris Johnson is also part of my personal wellness and prevention study club in my community. So we're pretty blessed to have him in our community. They have an amazing facility where we can come together with my team even and do wellness retreats and cooking classes and all kinds of fun things, and has his grown children in his business now, which many of us would love to have. So we can go in a million directions. He is really all things exercise, nutrition, stress, just basically healthy living without drugs, which would be nice if we could all build that life for our children and teach them how to do it when they're young. So welcome, Chris.
Welcome, my friend. How are you? Good to see you.
Well, thank you. Yes. Say more about, because I did a brief introduction. What would you like to say?
Well, you know, again, what you're saying too is you kind of aged me a little bit here, but you know, I've been doing this a long time, 36 years. I turned 65 years old next month.
Can you believe that?
And I have both of you, though. Like, you both are the epitome then of healthy living. I mean, that's beautiful.
63 in January, so we're commiserate. But I have to say, if you're on this podcast and looking at Chris, he's the real deal. When you see him in life, it blows your mind. So
you know, Paul and I we're celebrating our 40th anniversary next week, and Paul and I have 2 kids that are now 36, both Kristen and Matt. Work in the business. Kristen's our dietitian, one of our speakers, and Matt's a speaker and is also runs our company. So, and we have 5 grandkids. So that's a little history from me. As you know, you and I met at the Michigan Athletic Club eons ago when I was the director of fitness. Yeah. And then I started speaking, and then fast forward about 16 years ago, I went out on my own and started On Target Living. And today we travel around, and you brought your amazing team over for a training before COVID. So again, we have a beautiful headquarters here in East Lansing, Michigan. And
a great place for a retreat, by the way, even if you have to get on a plane to get there, it's an amazing facility. Beautiful.
Thank you. So we're real proud of it, and it's in East Lansing. So maybe you don't want to come in the wintertime, but yeah, we are trying to do the same thing you're trying to do is, get this generation, maybe the next generation, to be and feel their best. So no, thanks for having me today.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to have you. So tell us a little bit, you know, one of the things we talk about in the move section of the book, which is exercise physiology, is that we're very interested in kids having a lifetime of daily activity. I think in our society, there's a great focus on organized activity and sports and then professional sports. And somehow we think getting together around nachos and beer and watching sports on TV is sports. That's not sports, that's entertainment, if you ask me. But the idea of being able to do healthy movement daily to everything from lower blood sugar, store less fat, clear your mind, you know, gain, you know, stronger muscles and bones, and be able to balance and live. I mean, all of that, right? There's so many benefits to exercise, and how to do that in a way that's fun and attractive for families. What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, you're hitting all the right buttons. The bottom line is, in my latest book, it was called Rest, Eat, Move. It wasn't called Rest, Eat, Exercise. It was Move. And so the first thing you have to do is get the mindset around adults and kids that we need to move. And if you could put movement in a bottle, it'd be the most prescribed medication in the world. So it does so many wonderful things. And for me personally, the number one benefit when I move my body is how it creates a positive emotion. And so motion, you know, creates positive emotion. So we talk about all the mental health things are going on today, digestive health issues, the list goes on. If you can get people to start to move, and I really like what you said earlier, it doesn't have to be so structured. And I think that's a mistake we make in our school systems, that everything is structured. And so if you're not good in sports, you're probably not going to move a lot. Versus reality is, let's get our whole mindset around moving and the joy of moving and the joy of play. I have a whole chapter in my new book on play. So I really like the idea of, let's get away. I mean, you know, growing up in Michigan, you know, we were doing one activity after another, and it was very rarely formal. It was just playing, whether it was tag or we were playing sandlot baseball or whatever it might be. I think that's what we got to get more to. I mean, if you look around the playgrounds, you know, and I don't want to be that cynic here, but we're not using this only at a structured time. So we need to get everybody back into the mindset of finding activities you enjoy, getting a movement mindset, and then really looking at how do we create more play from the beginning of life to the end of life. I was watching a special the other night on Real Sports, and it talked about Senior Olympics, and it was just so fun to watch all these seniors just having a ball. They didn't really care how they did. They just wanted to just participate. So yeah, we need to get everybody moving more.
It's interesting. So in my neighborhood, there is a family called the O'Learys, brother to your best friend.
Yes.
I tell the story in the move section about one day we were up trick-or-treating. At the very end of trick-or-treat, we're like, maybe we could get one more house. And you know, the O'Learys in my neighborhood live on a long, long, long road right back into the, So Hunter and I were at 8:25 when, you know, the trick-or-treating was ending, and he was probably like 5 or 6, and we were winding down this little path. And all of a sudden we hear the music blaring. We look in the house and they're having a full on dance party. I mean, they weren't sorting candy, eating candy, doing their thing. It was the end of trick-or-treating. And here was a family full on dancing. We just sat there and went, obviously trick-or-treating was over for that family. We did not go up to the door. But it, you know, when I mentioned it to Kathy later, it's like, yeah, we just do that periodically a few times a week, like a full on dance party. That's fun. That's playful. And it, interestingly, one of the most vulnerable acts we can ever do is dance in front of someone. And you talk about the seniors at the Senior Olympics and how they've gotten over the sense of awkwardness of performance, of just being able to have
just participate. Correct. Yeah. Yeah. So I love the idea of movement. I think when I do presentations, we do virtual, whatever it might be, in the written stuff, we really promote movement. We don't really promote exercise. I'm an exercise physiologist by training. I don't really like the word exercise. I like the word movement. And we got to get the mindset around movement. But when we're struggling with all this mental health today, if you can get, especially our kids, to move better, they're going to sleep better. They're going to feel better. They're going to feel better about themselves. So the list goes on and on, but we got to get a mindset around moving right from the beginning. And it doesn't need to be formal, and it doesn't need to be 3 times a week. It needs to be every day, just moving the body. It could be 5 minutes, 10 minutes, just moving the body every day.
And I'm a big fan of outdoor play because in when we look at microbial diversity in the gut and all the ways that we decrease microbial diversity in such a way, increased allergies and autoimmune problems, we need more exposure to nature. Kids can play in anything except animal feces. They can play in dirt and grass and sand and trees and, you know, waters and streams. And the idea that we say, go outside and play, is if you're in a safe enough environment where you can do that, hopefully, you know, your kids can just go out and explore and play, and they're going to move, right?
Well, we have a place in Northern Michigan, and when we get the grandkids up there, it's a nonstop playing activities in the water, doing whatever. And it's incredible how well they sleep. Oh. So it's not an accident when they're getting outside, they're getting sunlight, they're breathing the air, but they're really active, how well they sleep. So again, when we look at all these challenges we're facing, some of the stuff's right in front of us. And I know it's sometimes a struggle for parents to find that safe environment for them to play, but is it real? And again, you learn coordination, you learn balance, you learn all these wonderful things just by just kind of experimenting with your body. And I think a lot of times when I see these athletes coming in to see us and they're only focused on one sport. When I start getting in to do other stuff, they don't really have that coordination. And I think we're missing some of that because the goal is not just to play a sport until we're X, you know, Roger Federer and Serena just retired from tennis. The goal is you want to try to create some of these activities they do for their whole life, not just a short period of their life.
I love that. I love that. I think the piece for me, I also was like interviewing kids that grew up to be adults that exercise daily. My godchildren, Vicky's kids, and my son Hunter and my nephews. And so I said to Hunter, I'm just curious, doing my field research for the book, like, how did you get to be to the point where you just valued movement activity every day? He's like, is this a real question, Mom? He's like, movement exercise was like next to the Bible in our family. Like, both you and Dad exercised every day. Did I even have a choice in it? I feel like my whole mindset. Now, it's funny, we don't really want to create carbon copies of us. We just, you know, we're doing a podcast on authenticity, you know, here. And yet there are certain things that you want them to be able to do daily. I have a Lisa Thornton, who's a good friend of mine, who runs a special needs hospital in Qatar, actually, but it's in Chicago. She says all the special needs kids have problems with digestion, constipation, mm-hmm. because they can't move readily. She said movement is really what helps with, again, GI motility and constipation. So yeah, it's not easy to do, but I think part of it is modeling it as parents.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, I feel like that's such a big part because we're making those same choices for our own life each and every day, right? We've had a long day. Do we come home and do we sit in front of the TV, or are we actually still moving around, moving our bodies? And, you know, just last week we had the same situation where it was after school, after a long day of soccer, being out in the heat for an hour, baking in the sun, right? We get home, we eat dinner, and they just want to watch TV. And it was the same thing with the dance party. I was like, no TV, like, let's move. So we put on the music, their favorite soundtrack, and we danced for like 30, 35 minutes. They didn't ask about TV for the rest of the night. Everyone was happy and we had such a good time, but it was that choice, right? Like, it's so important, and to instill that in them, like, don't opt for TV. Think about how good you feel when we are doing these dances.
And Lauren, your life is, your fitness level has changed since we started working together.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it went from just working in front of the computer, right? As being a writer, that's most of what I do, to then having a personal trainer, you know, 5 days a week for that accountability. And that would be something that my kids would go to me with, it's, you know, when they were out of school, it's the training session. So they would be there and they would see me training. And they would watch because they loved seeing it, like the boxing sessions or anything else. And then they would come home and, you know, it'd be like pushups. They do so many pushups all the time. And I love that. I love seeing it. And it's a choice I had to make.
Chris, tell us if there are limits and, you know, you've trained your whole life along with everything else you do. What about little kids? And obviously weight bearing activity on their own body is one thing, but what about weights? What about, you know, kids that want to get into more, you know, rigorous exercise?
Well, we get into, you know, there's a lot of kids now. I mean, they're starting so young, but really I try to get them to do, you know, if we're going to do any kind of strength training, it's just basically on their own body weight. It's going to be pushups. It's going to be squats, lunges, running, that kind of stuff. When they're ready to go, many parents bring their kids in, and we really start at the very beginning and start with the real basics and really get into the whole posture and technique versus just, because the kids are going to want to just compare themselves, how much weight they can lift and things like that. So, but for once they get about, you know, 12, you know, 11, 12, 13 years old, then that's time that they can start introducing that strength training. And strength training can come in all shapes and sizes. It can be body weight. It could be bands, it could be dumbbells. There's lots of things you can do. But the big thing at the very beginning is you really want to create some activities that they enjoy and get them moving. And if it's not fun, That's what I found right for the beginning. It's got, and I think what both of you are saying, you got to mirror this stuff. So if you're doing it, your activity is doing it. It's funny that when my grandkids, when I do these yoga stretches and balance stuff, they want to repeat it, want to watch it, they want to try it, you know, that goes on and on. But from a strength training standpoint, it's pull-ups, it's push-ups, it's body weight squats, things like that, hanging from a bar. So that's very safe because, again, you're not going to overdo it when you're handling your own body weight. But that's how I begin. I don't really get into formalized strength training, you know, until they hit at least 10 or 11 years old.
For sure.
Chris, yeah, I have a question related to that. Like my six-year-old is very, like, I don't know where it's come from lately, but he is very obsessed with the idea of muscles, right? Like he really wants arm muscles. Is that, just out of curiosity, a good focus for him to have that early, or is it important to shift it to some other aspect of why movement or?
Well, no, I think, you know, again, it's how you're presenting it. I think both of you guys, I wouldn't worry about that. But, you know, for example, in my household, you know, I've competed in 10 bodybuilding contests. So they're always talking about, you know, what's grandpa going to be for Halloween? And I always tell them I'm going to be the Hulk. I don't really have to dress up. I just am the Hulk, right? And so they think I have a lot of muscles. We talk about muscles. We give them cod liver oil and we call it muscle juice. So my grandkids are kind of obsessed about muscles because their grandpa's nuts, right? So, but in a nice way.
Aren't we all though? Obsessed
about muscles. Yeah, because, you know, muscle is your metabolic engine. And as we go, as we age, as we develop, we want muscle. So the key is understanding that muscle is not a bad thing. We wanted to build muscle. We want to support muscle because muscle is the engine. But you want to do it in a good way. We're not interested in creatine. We're not interested in all the energy drinks. We're not interested in any of that kind of stuff. We're just really interested in moving the body. And then slowly as the hormones change and the muscles start to grow. So to me, I was always obsessed. My 11th birthday, I had a 110-pound barbell set. So who got that set? As you know, you go back in the day, that was in the early 60s or mid 60s. So I've always been obsessed with muscles, but I think in a pretty healthy way. I've never done any drugs, and I don't expect to, and hopefully none of my kids or grandkids have ever participated. So yeah, I think muscle's a good thing, and keep talking about it because they love talking about it.
You know, when you look at where your body weight is distributed between water, fat, skin, bones, muscle, all of that, really the most metabolic tissue in the body is muscle. It burns 3.5 times more calories at rest than fat. And so if I always say to my audiences, like, whoever is sitting in front of me for the next 4 hours listening to me talk, whoever has more muscles burning more calories just sitting here. And that's really what people are obsessed with, like portion control. Tell us about, I mean, I think portion control is a misnomer. If you're paying attention to your hunger and your hunger is not skewed by all this sugar that people have and by lack of sleep and by all of that, we shouldn't need portion control for eating the right foods. We should be able to eat foods that are satisfying to us and not really be concerned about measuring portions and all that. That's really for commercial garbage food, is controlling portions. If you're going to eat Doritos, yes, you should eat one or less than one Dorito, period. That's, you know, portion control. Tell us, Chris.
I think the other thing too, back to the movement for a minute, when kids start to move more, adults move more, things just kind of hormonally, things start to get more in balance. And so your glucose levels get better. Everything gets better.
Totally.
So when you look at that differently, and again, back to the muscle, then you don't have to worry about this calorie here or portion control over here. You're getting better digestion. You get a better absorption. You sleep better. You get better hormones with sleep, whether it's leptin or ghrelin. The list goes on and on. So we sometimes want to make this too complicated. But if we get them to do the basics, and one of the basics is moving daily, and then we start slowly upgrading what they're eating, and they're going to start sleeping better and breathing better. And then that's where we're starting to have these healthy kids, which is, again, what your book's all about.
I love that though, because it's like, as parenting, it can feel so overwhelming, right? Like, am I doing everything right? And I mean, you just said it, like, let's just simplify so much of this. And if you can focus on movement, all of the benefits that arise from that is very powerful.
Yeah. I was talking to a group. I had a group in yesterday. I was a train the trainer, and you know, they came at it and they're like, you made this so simple today. I said, yeah, because the art of this, and Susan does this so wonderfully, is the art of this is taking something that's relatively complicated, very complicated, but how do you make it simple? We're not taught this in school. We should be. Parents are overwhelmed. But if you can get your kids to drink enough water, and you get them to get outside, move their body, get some sunlight, get them to bed on time, and get them to eat the right fuel, it's not, you're going to see really good results. And then you repeat A, B, and C over and over and again. But it's not sexy. But it's, again, the longer I've been doing this, you know, people asked me yesterday, they asked me, so tell me what you do. I go, it's relatively simple. I do this, and I do this, and I do this, and then I do it again tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And they're like, that's all? I'm going, that's it. I pay attention to my sleep, stay hydrated, eat super high quality foods, move my body, play, you know, have an attitude of gratitude. I got that from Susan. If you can eat these over and over and over, you're going to have pretty healthy kids.
That's beautiful.
I think that, you know, my proclination to exercise is, or my inclination, I should say, to exercise came from a gift from my doctor at a young age. And for those of you who read the preface, know my story. It was exercise first for lung health. And I had gotten so sedentary because of my allergies. I was kept indoors and, you know, sat and did a lot of creative stuff. And I became overweight by yesteryear standards and youthfulness. And I was borderline diabetic. They said it was maybe because my grandmother was diabetic, but it wasn't at all genetic. It was lifestyle. And we see so many children now, 1/4 of our children have non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. They've never had a drop of alcohol from sugar. The overweightedness, the obesity, the autoimmune challenges and allergies and all that are really, a lot of it can be solved through movement as a beginning place. I don't think you can, you know, we say you can't out-exercise a bad diet. We've said that, right? You have to really ultimately change how you fuel your body as well. But there's more motivation to fuel your body well when you're feeling good, you know?
Well, and I think it's that whole, it's combination. That's why, you know, when I wrote this book, this last book, I wanted to call it what it was. You know, I don't want to hide around. It's like, okay, this is a book about health. You know, and so sleeping and breathing and space and all that stuff that has to do with rest and then the eating. But if you go back to the eating thing for a minute, I think the biggest thing that we try to teach is the source. Where does the food come from? And so if you looked at, hey, here's an apple, and Susan knows this really well, but if you consume an apple, it's an amazingly healthy thing for the gut. And then we get away from the apple when we move over to applesauce and then apple juice, we keep moving away from the source. So as a parent, and this is what we try to teach, and my daughter Kristen's our registered dietitian, and my son Matt, it's easy thing in our family. But if you can get everybody to think about that, like if your kids like Pop-Tarts, you get a better Pop-Tart. If your kids like chips or crackers or whatever it might be, you just slowly start upgrading. So you're not really taking things away, you're just making them better. And when parents have that thought, like, I'm not taking away, you know, chips, I'm not taking away pizza, I'm just feeling good about it because it's made with better ingredients closer to the source. So that's what we have heard from many, many parents. Like, we love your philosophy of the source. You're not telling me I need to get rid of it. You're just making it better. And as you make it better, they start to crave more of that high quality food versus, you know, the stuff that's so easy to crave. Because, you know, once you start going down that path and you keep eating crummy food, then you keep eating crummy food. So that's how we begin with many parents, is like, don't get rid of it. This is, how do we make it a little bit better?
And you know, I can't remember who it was in our wellness and prevention group. It might've been Carla Guggenheim, but she said to me one time, here's how I help patients lose weight. I don't take away food. I add food. It's like, okay, tell me about that. She said 38 to 50 grams of fiber a day. And trust me, they don't have room for crackers and chips, right? If you push them to eat all the crackers and chips you want, but you have to get in this many grams of fiber. We're talking about a basketball size portion of fruits and vegetables a day. It literally pushes out your hunger for simple carbs.
And if you, and if the other thing too, again, our kids are going to be exposed to lots of things. Mm-hmm. So you can't kind of hide them and whatever, but as time goes on, and you both said this well, as you start creating an environment at home, then your kids are going to get used to that's kind of what they eat. Now, you're not getting rid of it. Like, we have pizza growing up, we had cookies, but instead of Matt doing the Oreo cookies, we would maybe move over to Newman's O's. Well, he wouldn't eat as much of those because they weren't as sweet. So that's the baby steps along the way. And I love what Carla said is you're just not getting rid of stuff. You're just adding things. So we make pancakes. I'm like Grandpa Pancake. And so when the kids, all grandkids get together, I make them with oatmeal. I put applesauce in there. I put real berries in there. It's nothing that's not high quality. Oh, and by the way, we put coconut oil, and they love the taste of them. And so it's an easy sell for my kids and our grandkids. But I did that recently with a group, and they said, how come these pancakes taste so good? What kind of sugar did you add to them? I said, well, all I added is fruit to it. And so people have to have that thought process that they can create an environment, and then now you're teaching your kids, whether it's Hunter or my kids, is that now they have the skill set to go into adulthood. And now it's funny to watch my kids raise their kids, and I don't have to say nothing. I'm just looking at this. And in fact, I'm giving them more stuff that they probably shouldn't be eating because grandpa.
Your grandpa.
So anyway.
I think the first time I ever had soaked oats or overnight oats was with you. And I think we were up at a retreat center. I was doing a leadership retreat at Mark Jovian's place, and you had brought this.
That's correct. Yes.
And yeah. That was, I don't know how many years ago, a long, long time ago, but I was like, well, this is delicious. You know, now, of course, you know, everybody around me knows overnight oats, but you know, the whole idea.
I tell everybody that I make the world's best oatmeal. So anyway,
it's amazing,
but it's so simple to do. And it's a great way to have your kids start the morning off that doesn't take time. You make it the night before, it takes about a minute, and then it's very inexpensive. Mm-hmm. And now they're heading off to school with a high magnesium fiber, healthy breakfast. So that is the key right there, in my opinion, to start building some of these slow habits, and they'll have them forever.
What would you say are some of the building blocks of nutrition that you'd want your kids to have every day?
Well, I think the big thing is I really want them to understand hydration and how important it is. We're not talking about energy drinks. We're not talking about, you know, colored beverages. We're talking about real water. So that's a big one. The other two is omega-3 fats. I mean, you know, this is why we promote it, because about 95 to 97% of the American population, especially our kids, are deficient in omega-3 fats. And that's why we have our own product called cod liver oil that we get from Dutch Harbor, Alaska. So those are some of the things right away. And then
omega-3s are in what, Chris? I know what they are, but tell the...
Omega-3s come from plant sources like flax and chia. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing, they come in from fish. So that's why we promote cod liver oil, because it's high in D3. It's also high in DHA and EPA, which is amazing for brain health. So it's everything from mood and hormones, and list goes on and on. And the other thing I try to make sure that most parents get in their kids' diets is foods high in B vitamins and foods high in magnesium. And that keeps the kids calmer. So that's why the oatmeal in the morning, I have real coconut in it. I have some berries, I have some nuts, maybe sometimes cacao nibs. It's a magnesium loaded, B vitamin loaded breakfast, which is very calming. So the next thing you know, all these kids are taking, you know, all these ADHD meds and this and that. I'm like, hey, you're feeding the kids crummy stuff. I mean, the kids are simple. Yeah. You get them to sleep, you get them to breathe, play, you feed them. They're probably going to have pretty good behavior. So
it's interesting that we look at ADHD, and 37% are really sleep deprivation, sleep and breathing disorders, or it could very well be they're just, the quality of sleep isn't there because they're not moving their bodies. So an ADHD diagnosis, I mean, we have to get better at asking better questions before we pump kids up on stimulants for ADHD when it's really a sleep problem. And movement, when you got a kid playing outside, they're going to sleep better.
Well, and I think your practice is gold. I mean, your practice is amazing because you're not just looking at the teeth and the gums. You're looking at the whole body. Looking at digestive health. I mean, that's the magic of what you're teaching. So I think that's what we're missing out there is like, okay, if I have some attention deficit or mood issues or whatever it is, let's go back to the question number one. Hey, tell me how you're sleeping. Tell me what you're eating, what you're drinking, how you're moving. If you can get some of those basic things down for people, including our kids, you're just going to see amazing behavior changes. And so I think that's what I've seen over the years. I mean, we've done 700 webinars since COVID hit, and most sought after webinar is mental health and the immune system. And really it gets back to the what we're talking about right now. Let's get back to the basics. Yeah. And
you would tout spirulina Corella over multivitamins. Tell us about that. Because a multivitamin for a kid, especially they give them sweet, gummy, chewy multivitamins, yeah, which I'm not a favorite.
Well, one of the things, again, I mentioned earlier is we really promote the source. Where does it come from? So for example, people say, well, I'm not going to be able to get my kids to do the cod liver oil. Well, all five of my grandkids take the cod liver oil. They think it's a treat. They think since grandpa's taken it, it's muscle juice. So, and it's
a little shot of it, right?
It's just organic lemon. So you're creating these habits because the kids don't know that. Yeah. Now, when you look at spirulina Corella, which is a freshwater algae, that's all it is algae, but it's super powerful. It's nucleic acids, a bunch of stuff, great for digestive health, super inexpensive. And so how do you get your kids to take that? It comes in a pill form. Well, some of the kids that are a little bit smaller, they can't take it in a pill form. We just crush it up and put it in a smoothie. They don't even know it's in there. So there's creative ways as a parent to feed your kids healthy.
Yeah.
And so these are just baby steps along the way. But for almost all the kids we work with, we try to get them to omega-3 fats first, get them to do water, get them to a healthier breakfast. And then we start slowly adding things in, such as the spirulina Corella and things like that.
So one of the things that we get concerned about now, especially after COVID, is breakfasts are being offered in school, and they're mostly packaged things like little donuts and the worst kinds of things for breakfast you can imagine. Sugared up yogurts and commercial carved up like packaged foods. What are some of the things that we can do to help our schools think about alternatives?
Well, I think as parents, we did this way back in the day at Hazlitt School Systems. I worked with the whole, because again, they have a certain budget they have to follow. And so we took soda pop out of the school system, and they replaced that with water. And believe it or not, they didn't lose a dime, but they thought that was going to be a big deal. But the gentleman that we worked with was in charge of the food system, heard me speak multiple times, brought me into the Hazlitt School Systems. And all the parents got behind them like, yeah, we don't want to keep feeding this garbage to our kids. So it really does begin with grassroots, making small steps, small changes. And then slowly over time, you're starting to educate not only the parents, but educating the administrators. And that's really how the change slowly occurs. But it has to start slowly. But we don't have to put up with this anymore. I mean, with obesity levels, diabetes, mental health issues for our kids, it really gets back to a big part of that is fueling, the bodies and the mind. And we need to really get into that because as Susan knows, food is medicine, food is information, food is also love and social, but that's a big part of our lives.
Well, one thing that our school has been really bad about, like almost every day that I pick up my 6-year-old or almost 7-year-old, he's in first grade, he's chewing gum or has candy because they get to pick out candy or gum from, good behavior throughout the day. And it makes me cringe. And he also tends to have a little anxiety sometimes going to school. And that's what I really loved about what you said earlier with even the oatmeal and what you can pack it with to help kind of, calm his system. And it's all about the choices we make, right? And I feel like right now it's hard with the school. I loved what you said about, no, you can still make change in the school. It starts with this grassroots effort, but then also really implementing those things at home as well.
Yeah, Lauren, one of the things you said is so funny. I had the grandkids over, I don't know, a week or so ago, and we were making popsicles. Mm-hmm. And they're like, people are like, making popsicles? Oh yeah, so simple. So we just bought a bag of oranges and we have a juicer and they're young. And so I cut them in half and they get to juice the oranges. And so we juice the oranges and then we have these little tiny ice cube trays. And then we take a stick and we put them in there. And so then now they have these little orange popsicles and they love them. It's just real juice. Yeah. So it takes time and everybody doesn't have the time. But again, it's these small steps. They see it and then they're going to take it to the next generation. And the other thing too, my daughter gets crazy too, because she's had a 1-year-old and a 3.5-year-old. And when she takes them to daycare and stuff, they don't feed them healthy. And But just don't worry so much about that. Just say, hey, you know what? I'm creating an environment over time. Here's some healthy snacks. You know, it's all these small steps. And if you want to get more in the schools, that's how it begins. But none of us want to be, and Susan's really good about this. You don't have to be militant about it. Yeah. I always talk about the more rigid you are, the more challenges you face. Mm-hmm. And the more I've been doing this a long time is like, let's create a flow. Let's work with people. Don't be so rigid. And I think people are more open for that to take a couple small steps.
I agree with that 100%. I also think that we have to remember that our brains have what we call neuroplasticity, right? We start to prefer the things that we consume regularly. And getting our kids, we have a very short window of opportunity with our children, really, when you look back, to build preferences around healthy foods. And it's up to us to supply those. So that's what they taste. That's what they're used to. That's what they think. You know, when he says, well, my grandkids like cod liver oil, it's like, really? Well, it's, first of all, that's pretty delicious cod liver oil. Your cod liver oil. But I have to say, it's what they've grown up and are accustomed to. And I remember that when Hunter was in sixth grade at Chippewa, Dr. Tweedy, like 3 days into sixth grade, I get an email. He goes, I've never emailed a parent about lunch, but I have to say, when your son pulled out a bag of raw spinach, I about died. And I asked him what it was. And he said, you don't recognize spinach, Dr. Tweedy? He said, I thought that's what it was. He said, next thing you're going to tell me you eat Brussels sprouts too. And he reached in that brown bag and pulled out that roasted Brussels sprout, bag of roasted Brussels sprout. I thought I was going to die. And he goes, they're my favorite. We had them last night. They're left over. And so I thought to myself, well, what in the world? I mean, he's noticing it. I'm sure the kids are going to be teasing him too, right? So I decided to put a treat, which I now call a cheat, in his bag. I went to the store to buy potato chips, but I didn't know how to put potato chips in a brown paper bag. So I bought Pringles, those shaped ones, put a little tiny stack in there every day. At the end of the week, Hunter says to me, I said to Hunter, how did you like the treat I put in your bag? And he goes, treat. You call that a treat? He said, I had to ask what it was. And my friend said it was a potato chip. He says, Mom, I held it up to the light. It looks like particle board. Pretty sure it's not cut from a potato. And then he says, he says, well, keep it coming. It always makes a good trade because somebody's always got an apple they're not willing to eat. And then he jumps up and he goes, look at, he's a ski racer, right? He goes, this body is a rocket ship. It only gets rocket fuel. I don't know what you're thinking when you're putting crap like that in my lunch. So, you know, we teach our kids how to be authentically healthy, and they start to then be able to spread the word to their friends.
Well, I think as a parent, you just try to create a better environment. They watch what you're doing, and you don't have to be the food police. It just starts to happen. My daughter was the same way. I mean, I grew up, as you know, pretty unhealthy. Beefaroni, SpaghettiOs, psoriasis, digestive health, crummy.
Tell us about that.
And for most of my life, that's how I ate. I didn't know any different. I went to college. I was drinking 2 gallons of milk a week, and I had an economics professor. I was an economics major in undergrad, and he was talking about processed foods and profitability. And one night he was talking about cow's milk, and he said you shouldn't be drinking cow's milk. This was in 1977, unless you had your own cow. And I'm like, well, I don't have my own cow, but I drink 2 gallons of milk a week because I'm a poor college student trying to get big muscles. So I quit drinking cow's milk. My skin got better almost overnight. And that's kind of what drove me into this profession. So, and I was told, you know, I was on oral meds, topical creams, probably 12, 14 years of my life. But, you know, I told my parents, your son just has sensitive skin, but I didn't. And that was kind of my wake up call. And I remember when my daughter was in high school or middle school, she said, Dad, nobody eats like us in the neighborhood. You know, like you're like a freak show. And I said, well, honey, I'm sorry you feel that way, but this is what we eat. And you're not deprived. You can eat anything you want. We used to make better versions. And then over time, when she got in high school and started running track, she'd bring all her girlfriends over to give them all the stuff that we were eating because she's getting good results running track. So now they were interested in their skin and their bodies and everything else.
Love it.
Now I'm listening to my daughter tell them versus, you know, 3 years before that, I was a freak show. So as parents, we got to hold our guns. You never allow your kids to drink bleach. That wouldn't happen, right? So no. We don't have to be crazy strict about it and create that environment, but they will watch, they will learn. And hopefully over time, you create a healthier adult, which leads into the next generation, which that's our goal.
Love it. Yeah. Love, love, love. It has been so awesome having you. Do you have a copy of your book right there again?
Hold it up. Yeah, I have this big
newest book, amazing book, full of amazing color, which I'm jealous about. Rest
color, lots of pages, but it's more of a guide. So
it was funny because it launched the same week that Brave Parent did, and we had like my chapters that were like eat, move, sleep. We had like the same concepts. It was funny.
Same concepts, but a lot, different information. But yeah, same. We're in the same path for sure.
We're here to help influence the world and live healthier, happier lives. So I can't tell you how much I appreciate you. Chris is available for speaking engagements for any kind of corporate event, any kind of community event too. And so are his kids. And you'll find him at ontargetliving.com. And we'll have him back again. We have so much more we can talk about.
You guys are rock stars. Keep changing the world.
Thank you. You Thank too. You Thank you, Lauren. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to the Brave Parent Podcast with your host, Dr. Susan Maples, author of Brave Parent, and Lauren Eckert, founder of Burning Soul Press. Be sure to leave a podcast review and grab your copy of Brave Parent on Amazon or Audible or wherever you prefer to buy your books. Bye for now.